This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick a Week podcast, episode 362, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the happiest season.
Hey, welcome to a special holiday edition of the iFanboy Pick a Week podcast, episode 362. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And we are, it's a twofer episode this time, because due to the Thanksgiving holiday, it's just me and Josh, and we are recording on Thanksgiving.
I don't think that this has happened.
This has never happened. No, we've done a two-person show years ago.
I think G.I. Joe. Which was honestly one of the best ones we ever did. So I thought about that and I got excited.
Oh, I thought Connor banned us from doing two people show because the dynamic isn't good.
We did not check with him.
Yeah, we did not check with him at all.
we're going to be okay.
Yeah, I think we'll be fine. So we hope everybody's having a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday. We're taking a break from our turkey and all that stuff.
Have you eaten turkey yet?
I have not eaten turkey yet. Yeah, no, I'm going.
See, I slave it all day.
We're in that weird little in between. Although I saw the picture you posted, it looked a little dry.
I brined, bitch.
Anyway, so we are from the website iFanboy.com, which is a website dedicated to the love of and we are thankful for comic books. And every week we read comics, and then one of us picks the book and makes it a pick of the week, writes a review up on iFanboy.com, then we come back here and talk about it, as well as all, some of the other books that come out during the week. And we want to warn you, we're going to be talking about what happens in the books. So if you haven't read your books, press pause and come back and listen later, or just be warned that there might be spoilers. Also, due to the fact that it's Thanksgiving and I have not eaten dinner yet, this is going to be an abbreviated show, similar to when we do a convention style show.
So we're winging it.
We're winging it. So we're not doing any emails or voicemails this week. We're just talking about the books. It's going to be a little shorter this week. But you know, it's the holidays. We've done this for six, seven years. We earned it. So,
I love it.
All right. So this week,
listen, I don't want to hear it.
So this week, Joshua, you had the pick, and take it away, sir.
I know how to disappoint a crowd.
Yes, you do.
You know, I read a lot of comic books this week. A lot of them came out, except from DC Comics, who didn't really release anything.
They released some stuff.
And I got through them, and there was no clear winner. I went through, and I gave everything a rating on my list, and the only thing that I had given a 5 to was Baltimore the Play. And I thought, do I have anything to say about this?
Interesting.
And then I thought about it, and I did. It was, you know, it was straight. It was just the best thing I read in a week that was pretty good. It wasn't like an week. It was just like everything was pretty good, but there wasn't a lot to say. And what this was is I actually wasn't expecting this. This is a one shot. Baltimore is a sort of side project that Mike Mignola has going on that he writes with Christopher Golden, and the art's always by Ben Stenbeck, with colors by Dave Stewart. And it's a story about this dude who's totally grizzled, a World War I vet, Lord Baltimore, and this vampire, Lord Haggis, killed his family, and he's just on a quest to kill this guy, this vampire who is spreading his vampire plague throughout Europe. And it is exactly what it sounds like. It's not, you know, it's Mignola. It's kind of he's just a grizzled dude, and everything is kind of bleak and awful. And it's very simple, but it's very well done and solid and fun. I've liked every issue. And it's funny, somebody in the comments was like, "Well, I knew Baltimore came." That's not true. Like I've read lots of these and not made them pick of the week. But what was really neat about this one is that it starts off seeming like a regular Baltimore story, where he rides into this grizzled European town with the brick bridges and the beautiful buildings, and people are throwing dead bodies into the river. And he's like, have you seen the guy I'm hunting for? And they're like, yes. And then they cut to in an interior of this playhouse where these actors are apparently putting on a play about the plague that's going on. And you find out that Haggis, the sort of leader of the vampires, has commissioned this play, and he hired the lead actress, and all of the actors are all also vampires. And there's this sort of, it's very odd. You're like, this is weird, because Baltimore actually doesn't have anything to do with this story after sort of the opening framing device. I'm going to just spoil it because I don't have any other way to talk about it.
Well, go spoil it, because good chance that nobody else read it. So.
Oh,
no, I'm kidding.
Listen, we're on the third or fourth, you know, iteration of this, so somebody must be reading.
No, I know, and also, I'm sure the Mignola, Mignola world people, this is right up their alley. They're not personally up my alley, but yeah, so
that's fine. What was interesting though is that I looked, and on iFanboy, of the people who pulled it, not an insignificant amount. You know, it's averaging 4.9 out of 5. So I'm like, well, I can't be that far off. Like, people are really digging this. The ones who they're into.
Yeah, it got 170 total pulls, and actually 3.3% of the iFan base made it their pick of the week. So it was more picked than Daredevil. So
there you go.
Yeah,
because it was a really great issue. And what it turns out is that Haggis was under the spell of the lead actress Isabella, who's a muse. And so, like, all of a sudden, the vampire who'd been the big bad for the whole series is in thrall to this woman. And that's why he's putting this play on. That's why all this strange stuff is happening. But not only that, the writer of the play, the playwright, is Edgar Allan Poe's head, which is kept in a jar, which is kept alive, also in thrall to the muse, so that he can write plays for her to perform in. And it's just this odd little thing. The jar has... It looks like one of those sort of cylindrical spaceman jars, and then it has a little wooden base with little claw, little carved wooden claw feet on it. It's just this great little design. And I looked at it, I was like, is that Edgar Allan Poe's head? And she called him Edgar, and it is. And I just really liked that it was just this interlude. Right. Like, it's called The Play, and it was this interlude in the series, which has been a lot of fun but fairly predictable, and they just went and took a different view on it. On top of that, I really like Stenbeck. I don't know anything else he's done. He's done every issue of this. He's from New Zealand. Obviously, you have Dave Stewart coloring it, and he does that thing that Dave Stewart does where everything's in the grayish, purplish area, and then there's sort of there's red in different places. One of the characters dresses all in red, and he's got a skull for a face. He's one of the actors, but he's also a vampire apparently under there. But it's just visually, it's really good to look at. All the pages, and the vampires have red eyes, and those are the things that stand out. And it's just, you know, he's Dave Stewart. He's the godfather of digital coloring in comics, basically. And it's really a solid issue, and I kind of didn't expect it. And at the end of everything, I was like, you know, it was like a really perfect sort of holiday comic interlude compared with everything else that I was reading. You know, like, we've been reading Marvel Now number one after Marvel Now number one, and they've been really good.
Well, hey, you can't be like number one after number one. It's really only been like two issues a week so far, so it hasn't been that
like
bad.
3 weeks, and yeah, I may have read ahead.
True,
I'm just saying I'm reading a lot of these, so... Like, you get what that formula is, and people do it really well, and it's fun, but sometimes you like a different, you know, different part of the
sure, yeah. And like fun. And like I said, for the diehard Mignolas,
this, you know, is where it is at, right?
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, this is it doesn't get any better than this, right? Yeah. So
exactly. So, you know, at the end of the day, it wasn't a hard pick. It's the only thing I gave a 5 to. If you've enjoyed Baltimore before, you definitely don't want to miss this. If you haven't, but you've been curious about it, you can easily pick this up. It's a fun little story. I'm sure that there are a lot of literature allusions happening in here that I've missed and went over my head.
Well, you weren't an English major.
I don't. I'm barely literate. I mean, I struggle daily.
Yeah.
They're there. Well, I can't even. Anyway.
It was funny. It was funny because I was really curious what you were going to pick. And
I was too.
Yeah. And we'll talk about it a little later on. And I was even trying to influence your pick. But when the pick came up with ball, I was like, oh, of course. Of course.
Well, the fact is, like, it's actually not true. Like, there's all sorts of times that I've had the pick in one of these books, and I didn't pick it because it was like, it was good. It's fine. You know, right. They're usually. Right. Four star books.
Well, I mean, and the thing is that, like, we tend to spend a lot of time talking about, you know, the big two, and a lot of time talking about Saga, and a lot of time talking about, you know, and it's nice to see other, you know, like, there's so many books that come out each week, and like, they're different, you know, like, different topics and different genres and stuff like that. So it's nice to see a book like this get its attention as due, because it came at the right time. Yeah, because the thing is, I completely don't question the quality of it. Look at that lineup and you look at what they're doing. That's, you know, and clearly there's an audience for it, or they wouldn't be doing it. I mean, it's not like Dark Horse wants to go out of business or anything, you know. So,
I really appreciate your justification here.
Sure, yeah. You're welcome. You know, I'm here to support you. So,
thank you.
All right. But now let's get to the comics that matter.
Oh, thank God.
So another week of Marvel Now releases, and of the Marvel Now books that launched this week, I believe the only number ones were Indestructible Hulk and Captain America number one. Is that correct?
Captain America, can you hear the size of Rick Remender's balls clanking from here?
Yeah, you can. So you're a long time
follow up.
Yeah. To follow Brubaker, a big shoes to fill.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think that right away, my first instinct was like, he made the correct decision to go in a very different direction.
Yeah.
You know, you've gotten this. You know, Remender's not going to do that Brubaker kind of story, and that's the right choice.
Right.
And this was definitely a whole different thing. Well, with a whole different art style and every, you know.
Yeah, well, so art by John Romita Jr. and Klaus Janson and Dean White, which, you know, it looks great. You know, I mean, like,
Absolutely. And
I'm a huge Romita fan, and I know some people have a hard time with Romita and find him to be challenging, whatever. I you know, because I grew up with the dude, so, I mean, like, I didn't grow up with him. Like, we didn't play kickball, but, like, I grew up reading his comics.
I see. And you probably weren't that far.
No, we weren't.
He's much older. It's funny, because you put a junior on the end of somebody's name.
Yeah.
And you just assume that they're, like, you know, early 20s. Like, he's 50-something.
Yeah,
like,
no, dude's not, in his 50s. Yeah, he looks great for 50. Looks great.
He does.
Yeah.
Thick black hair. I mean,
flowing mullet. It looks great.
It's not David Marquez's hair.
No, yeah, true.
We're doing more of that insider bull. If you've ever seen David Marquez's hair, though, you'd know what I was talking about.
Yeah, he's got a nice head of hair. But anyway, so if you go to ifanboy.com on Wednesday, we ran a pretty lengthy kind of breakdown of this issue with Remender, which I actually had a ton of fun doing with him. And basically what we did was we kind of went through scene by scene, and you know, and this issue really gives you a taste of what Remender's going to bring forward. I mean, we got the initial flashback to 1926, to the Lower East Side, to, you know, to the young Steve, because Remender really wants to kind of flesh out who, you know, who, how did Steve Rogers become who he did, or who he is. And then, you know, then we get the little action kind of intro, which I hope he brings back the Green Skull.
Yeah.
Like that, talk about a great villain like that. I love the idea of the legacy of it and all that sort of thing. And the way he wrote him was just hysterical.
That first page out of the flashback, it's actually a double page spread, but the first page of it with the sort of the plane going down, straight down, and like as they just pushed in on each tall vertical panel. I really love that. That's gorgeous.
Yeah, Romita did great stuff.
I was gonna say, just in terms of Romita, before we move on from completely, one of the things I love about Romita, and I don't think that he was well served on Avengers. I think it was too many characters, it was too much talking for him, and this feels much more like his speed. Yep. To me, the dude is a direct link to Marvel 60s, Marvel from the 60s, and I know that like his dad, John Romita, was indispensable to that era. But I see a ton of Kirby.
Yep,
I see from basically there's a sort of a through line in art that goes from Jack Kirby to I think Walter Simonson to John Romita Jr. and to have just to see that family connection that happens in Marvel, it's one of the reasons I really love it.
Well, just look at Arnim Zola.
Yep.
I mean, like that is about as Kirby as I've ever seen Romita do. I mean, look at that outfit. He's got the dots linked with lines, and that is a Kirby-esque villain. And it looks like with this Dimension Z, so basically Captain America is investigating some ancient subway that S.H.I.E.L.D. has reported. That was a little weird. I'll give him that. Like, sit there, they're like, oh, there's this subway that appeared out of nowhere. Why don't you just get on it? And like, and then the S.H.I.E.L.D. guy is just like, only one person at a time. Like, why? Like, why didn't Sharon go? Like, that was like kind of weird. But and then he gets on it, and then it like locks him in, and then it goes off into Dimension Z, which who cares? Like, it's just a device to get him into Dimension Z. But if this is going to be like a kind of like Steve trapped in Dimension Z story, like, sign me up. It looks good. So
I always
like
that. My favorite Avengers story of the last, I don't know how long, was Avengers Prime.
Yeah.
And it was the idea of taking Steve Rogers and sticking him in, I don't think it was Asgard, but it was one of the Nine Realms. And that was great.
Yeah. That was the Alan Davis one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're going to stick him in, you know, some strange place, there's a lot of really good stuff, sort of contrast that you can do with Steve Rogers and him there. Yep. I will say there were things about this that were very familiar to the Remender oeuvre.
Yep.
There was the angry dad at the beginning.
Well,
in his defense,
that was pre-established that his dad was a drunk.
No, yeah, absolutely. So, I'm saying, but that just that fits with what he does. You know, that was the strongest part of Venom.
Yeah.
Those were some of the best parts of Fear Agent. It's not that that's all he can do, but when he does it well. Is my point.
So Captain America, great. I'm going to stick with it.
Yes, absolutely.
So moving on, Indestructible Hulk number one. I'm not a big Hulk fan, but Mark Waid, we know how great he is. Lanil Yu, I actually really enjoy. I enjoyed the hell out of this, and I love the concept. The way I looked at it, it's one of those concepts where I can't believe someone hasn't done this already.
I definitely had that feeling. I was like, oh, that's pretty smart and good.
And it also makes me wonder how much of a pre-tie-in to movie stuff this is. Basically the premise is that the Hulk is loose. Maria Hill is trying to track him down because she's afraid, you know, everyone's afraid with the Hulk out there. He's going to destroy a city or something. And Banner comes in and in a scene in a diner, which I thought had great tension.
Yeah.
Like really good, really good, good tension.
It was really interesting. Dude, it was a movie kind of thing when that dude bumped into him.
Yep.
That was very a kind of thing you do in a movie that's hard to make work on a comic book page. And
the clock is ticking and all stuff.
Yep.
And basically Banner sits down and says, listen, you know, I'm a genius. I'm up there, but nobody ever takes me seriously because of this Hulk thing. He's like, we spend this whole time trying to contain it. What if we don't contain it? What if it's a force that we can use? and Banner's a little pissed that Stark was the one that came up with the, you know, the tool to save everybody in AVX against the Phoenix. And you see a little competition there between him and Tony Stark and Reed Richards and stuff like that. And, you know, and I thought what was great, the line that Wade wrote where Banner says, you know, I'll be lucky if my tombstone doesn't simply say Hulk smash. Yeah. You know, and so he says, listen, I'll work for S.H.I.E.L.D. Give me a lab. Let me do my stuff. I'll create great stuff. And then when I Hulk out, point me in a direction of where you need me and I'll be your weapon. I'll be a cannon. Mm-hmm. And like that's, and so Hulk working for S.H.I.E.L.D., genius, genius idea.
I think one of the really thing one of the, I think you're right, like it's a great idea. It's really interesting to me that Joss Whedon or, you know, or whoever was involved with that were the people to crack the Hulk code.
Yeah.
Or at least the new Hulk code. It worked for a really long time, but I think the writers were running low.
Yep.
On what to do. This is why they went to Red Hulk. Like, oh, we'll use a different character and this is a different thing we can do. So if you're going to go back to Banner, you know, how to make it interesting again, and you know, we're still in the middle of Mark Waid can do no wrong, sort of.
This takes the focus away from the Hulk and puts the focus on Banner, which, you ask me, is way, way more interesting.
And I think that was one of Peter David's big secrets.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
I was really impressed by Lionel Yu.
Yep.
I think I associate him with Secret Avengers now, so I think I don't like him.
Yeah.
Well, not Secret Avengers.
Secret Invasion.
Yeah. I keep doing that. Yeah. But,
No, Lionel Yu is great. I've always liked Lionel Yu. That double-page spread of the Hulk was intense. That was really good.
He's got a nice new haircut, so that's good.
Yeah, it's a little more of a buzz cut. Yeah. And he had the purple pants, which always works.
You know, I didn't love this issue. I thought it was pretty good. I'll keep reading it, which is a big deal.
Yeah.
I don't read Hulk books.
Right, so there you go. Yeah, and I mean, it was set up. It was definitely set up. Then we'll see what happens. But I just like the premise. I like the approach. So
I like Banner.
Yep. So Indestructible Hulk, I'm on board. Count me in.
Fair enough.
So the book that I tried to nudge you in the direction for pick of the week, because this was my clear pick of the week, was Amazing Spider-Man number 698.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Dan Slott, I think, has been doing a great job on Spider-Man this past year. He's been putting a lot of pieces on the board. He's been piecing things together. And basically, this kicks off what is going to ultimately end Amazing Spider-Man when it ends after 700 and then segue into Superior Spider-Man. And we've seen throughout this past year, he's been using Dr. Octopus, who's, you know, on Death's Door, and he had that big scheme to his last greatest triumph was going to be that whole story arc where the ends of the Earth, where he put all his Doc Ock bots in space and was going to, you know, was holding the world at ransom, and Spider-Man saw through it and captured him and saved everybody. And somehow Doc Ock was able to swap minds with Peter Parker. And that's what we found out in this issue. And so Doc Ock is there on the raft, and he's all hooked up to all these machines. And you, throughout this issue, you get Spider-Man being very kind of aggressive and kind of going through his life. And he's like, Mary Jane, I should be with her. Let me see what I can do about that. And you're just kind of like, this is a weird Peter. And then it gets to the end, and Doc Ock is on his death's door. And so the Avengers bring in Spider-Man, because apparently Doc Ock is saying Peter Parker, he's asking for him. And you get this scene where it's just them alone, and Doc Ock reveals that it is him inside Peter Parker's body, and we find out that Peter Parker is inside Doc Ock's body, and then it goes from there. And I love the concept. I think it's great, and I thought Richard Ellison did a great job illustrating it. I thought he draws a great Mike McCone-esque Spider-Man, which is really the kind of Spider-Man I like. Different than Giuseppe Camuccoli, who we've had for the past couple weeks, different than Humberto Ramos, who we've had, you know, like a cleaner line Spider-Man. I thought it was great.
I haven't been reading this, as most people who listen know. The thing that got me about this, though, just the overall feeling that I had afterwards was that it was like 5 pages of a story spread out over 20 pages.
Yeah.
And I just felt like it was a little bit of wasted space, a lot of wasted space.
All right.
And that was my main problem with it. I just felt like it wasn't used as a whole issue enough. There was a lot of setup.
Well, I don't know. I thought Slott did a good job of making it confusing enough, because when it starts, you immediately can sense that something's different about Peter. And building up
the other thing, I haven't been reading it, so I didn't know that. Maybe that's just how he's writing Peter.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I've been reading it, and like,
and then the other side is like, you really like the. I really didn't like the art that much.
Oh, so. I really like the art. I mean, I thought it's very middle of the road. Richard Elson has he previously did Journey into Mystery, which is a little more mystical, a little more painterly, that sort of thing. But I thought, the flashback, Mary Jane panel looked great.
That's just drawing the Romita.
Well, no, I know, but not everybody can do that. I mean, I don't know.
Every time you've ever seen that, like, I'm so sick of them referring to that.
Yeah, I know.
But I mean, it's right behind the Electra stab, which they have let off on a little bit. Yeah. I'll give.
But I don't know. There's the one page after the title page, and then after we see Spider-Man over the city, there's the scene of Spider-Man swinging and with the kind of diagonal panels. I just thought that was really impressive. I thought that was a really good page. So
For me, it was sort of neither here nor there. Yeah. It's not the kind. Yeah, didn't really do it for me, but felt like it was almost animated.
Yeah,
which for me, I don't know. I don't like that. But whatever. Right. It wasn't bad. I just was like, it's fine. It's fine. Cool. It's fine.
All right. Well, we're very Marvel heavy. Why don't you take us to DC?
The only DC proper book that I bought was Wonder Woman, and I'm picking it up so that I know what to say about it.
Well, so this was
it's a Tony Akin's book.
Well, so. It wasn't Tony Akin's book. That's the thing. Like this is my problem with Wonder Woman is the inconsistency with it. And like
it's not inconsistency. It's trying to keep it steady.
Except that this issue had Azzarello, of course, writing it, with Tony Akins doing layouts, and Dan Green and Rick Burchett doing finishes.
That's a lot of people.
You know, and so, like, the whole thing is, like, okay, they brought in Akins because Chang can't do a monthly book, and now you're bringing in two different people to do finishes. Admittedly, they were used in different flashback kind of modes, and I know that's why they brought in those different artists. But, like, I understand we got to keep the monthly schedule, but really, you know? So... Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's just me nitpicking, but
on the good side of things, and it should be noted, and I want to make this clear, it's not bad art,
right? No, it's not bad art.
Just in comparison, we're going to be talking about another book with that exact same issue in just a little bit. But I really, the one thing that I keep going through is I really love the God pantheon still, and every time that they expand it out and they bring something new to it. Obviously, it's rooted in the Greek mythology, but they're giving a different twist to it and bringing new things to it. I really enjoy that, and I do not. I don't know how I feel about Orion and the fourth world being brought in too.
I like it. That's the thing keeping me involved.
It feels superfluous.
Oh, I love it. I'm really curious to see how they do it. I will say from an art standpoint. I thought the Orion pages were the best in the book, and I don't know if because they were kind of Kirby. Animated-esque, but I just really liked them. I thought they were good. So
I really like Orion as a character a lot.
Yeah.
So it doesn't feel like it fits in this story, which is this sort of personal. I think it's because the tone of it is, it's been so personal and familial.
Yep.
It's all these, like Hera's mad about Zeus, and like all the brothers and sisters have all these rivalries, and there's all this stuff going on, and the little girl's abandoned by her father, and I was like, how can Orion fit into that?
Yeah.
It doesn't. It seems forced.
Yeah.
But that's a guess. I don't know if anything is happening like that. Right. But I'm still reading it. And cool. That's 14 months of Wonder Woman. That has got to be a record for goddamn near everybody out there.
Well, I mean, for you at least, maybe. But for me, it's definitely for you. Yeah, for me too. I've never read Wonder Woman this long. So
yeah.
All right. Well, before we move on to the other books, we want to remind everybody that the holidays are coming. This is Thanksgiving weekend. That means your holiday shopping starts now. And so make sure you go and do your shopping at Amazon.com. And you can help out iFanboy by shopping at Amazon through iFanboy. Go to iFanboy.com/Amazon or go up in the upper navigation of the site and click on the store, and there's a little shop at Amazon link that will take you right into Amazon, and doing so helps out iFanboy in the process. So I do all my Christmas shopping on Amazon. Makes it easier. I avoid them all. So I advise you to do the same.
Did you hear yourself say that?
No, I didn't.
Wall. You brought that long.
I'm watching Goodfellas, so it's But yeah, anyway.
They don't go to the thing is, in real life, on the helicopter day, they went to the mall.
Yeah.
And they didn't do it in the movie, and they should have.
True, yeah, yeah. I know what mall in real life they went to, too.
I know you
do. Yeah, anyway. All right, so go to iFanboy.com/Amazon and just click on the big – there's a big, huge banner there. You can't miss it. Just click on it, then you'll be all set. So, all right, yes. So a couple of books came to an end this week. A couple of series ended this week, so we wanted to touch on them.
Dark Avengers 183 was, I think the last issue of Jeff Parker's – really, well, it fizzled a bit at the end, but long, really good run on Thunderbolt/Dark Avengers.
I don't know if it's the end, to be honest. I'm looking at the last page. It says next, Advanced Mechanics. I don't think this is the last issue.
He was talking about it on Twitter as if, like,
it was
wrapped up.
Let's see what happens.
Double check. You double check. I'm going to talk about it for a minute, though.
Okay.
One of the things that is about this series is that at first when you had when it was Thunderbolts and you had Kev Walker and then he alternated with Declan Shalvey, it was my favorite book at Marvel for a good long amount of time. And then obviously because it was all Thunderbolts or it didn't include characters that people like, they switched it over to Dark Avengers and I started falling off very rapidly. It just didn't have the same flair. Other artists came in. Same thing that happened with Hulk actually. And then it kind of ended. Like these you know, and that's sort of what happened here. All these characters sort of at the end of it stepped into the you know, teleportation void of the Man Thing and went off on their separate ways and it was kind of like, oh, it's over. And it was a little disappointing in that it never got bad, but it had such verve. I would have loved to see it if they'd let the story sort of really do what it was going to do from the beginning, and I don't feel like that was the case. Like, I feel like they had to take a left turn in the middle of it, and then they ended up with this version of it that was less than, and like, you just really interesting artists for a long time, and when they were traveling through time, and there's all this stuff going on, and you know, they kind of pantsed it.
Well, good thing though that this isn't the last issue, because it looks as if I can tell it's going to at least Dark Avengers number 186. So right. This looks like this is the end of this story with the Thunderbolts and the Dark Avengers and that sort of thing. It looks like they're going to focus on US Agent next in the next arc. Okay. And I think it ends at 187. So,
okay.
Yeah. So the end of an arc
for those characters, though.
Yeah.
Which are the ones we've been with for a good long while.
Yeah. All right.
How about Avengers?
Avengers number 34 was Brian Michael Bendis' last issue of Avengers, I believe.
All Avengers?
I believe so. That's what he was saying. Talk about ending with a whimper.
we are so catty today.
Well, no, I don't know. I mean, I almost would prefer like Hickman's last Fantastic Four issue. Like that was a good, you know, Captain America, Brubaker's last Captain America. I almost feel as if Bendis deserved something more than just the end of this, you know, they found Janet storyline. Most importantly, no mention of the closet.
None
whatsoever. So he had the opportunity to close the door.
can we be brutally honest here?
Yeah.
Bendis's tenure on the Avengers has been ending for years now.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I feel like they originally were like, they solicited, like, this is the end of it, but that was 8 months ago.
It was a year ago that it was December 2011 that he said he was leaving the book.
Right. So, and so we've been living with this, like, is it over yet? It's the end of the Lord of the Rings movie.
Is it over yet?
It won't end. And now, like, we're like, you're done now? Yeah. Are you good?
No, yeah, I think this one is indeed he's done, because he wrote a big long thing at the end of it and said goodbye, right, Avengers. I just would have liked, I think he would have deserved a better kind of wrap up sitting around the table talking issue than, you know, than this, you know, the end of this Janet story, which was kind of meh. But I will say it was cool that in the end of it, they had Brandon Peterson and Mike Mayhew and Terry Dodson did the majority of the art on this issue. Terry Dodson did the last scene, and Peterson and Mayhew did scenes early into it. But during the big fight at the climax, they had a jam piece that featured Diodato, Walt Simonson, Lanil Yu, Jim Chung, and Olivier Coipel. So they got, except for John Romita Jr., they got every artist that he's worked with on the Avengers. Which was a nice touch, which was very cool. So you had big, huge splash pages by those guys. So
I think he stayed on the stage too long?
Yes. Oh, yeah, we said it already. Bendis on the Avengers was the dude. He's the dude where he should have left the party at like 11:30, but stayed till 3.
This is like Seinfeld season 11.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a little bit. So, anyway. Yeah.
Well, you know what? He's done. I'll credit, you know, this is the guy who got me reading superhero comics again with new Avengers.
Oh, yeah, no. Mad respect. Tons of respect. He got me reading Avengers. He totally owned Marvel for so long. I mean, like, this was great. That's why I think he deserved a bit more of an exit. So,
sure.
That said, I'm very excited for Hickman and Opeña. So,
You know what's upsetting?
What?
Rocketeer and the Cargo of Doom was only a 4-issue miniseries.
I know. I wanted it to never end.
Yeah, and it's going to be different people next time.
Well, they say the Rocketeer returns in 2013.
Yeah, I know, so, but it's not going to be this fucking magnificent team of Mark Waid,
isn't it going to be
Somni, and it's
J-Bone and Langridge.
Langridge is writing it,
and J-Bone is drawing it.
And I believe that Belair is still coloring it.
Yeah, that's going to be good.
It's not this though.
I know. Said.
And you know what I'm talking about. Like, at the end of the day, you know, Jordy Belair is going to come out of this one. You know, you've already seen it. Like, yeah, you know, she's going to.
Well, she's
be,
already a star. I mean, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. But for but me,
I
for
feel
me,
like this was the last sort of thing where they were like, "Here you go."
Yeah. For me, it is the second to last page with the Cliff and Betty flying up in the air. Like that was great. That was
gorgeous,
so
gorgeous page. Yeah. Although it ended on a cliffhanger.
It did. Yeah.
And I want to know what's going to happen, and I don't know when I will.
Well, in the next series, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they're not. Maybe Langridge isn't going to take up that story.
Well, why would they do that if they didn't already plan that?
They're waiting for Mark Waid to come back later.
Nah, who knows? We'll see. Anyway, it was great. So.
It was great.
Yeah. So
they shot a dinosaur in half, and then that bottom half fell over.
So I had a conversation on Wednesday with a mutual friend of ours speculating what your pick was going to be, and he was dismissing it going, oh, it's just going to be Hawkeye number 4. But it wasn't, and I don't disagree.
No. No.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem with here's the Hawkeye problem. We fell in love with the first three issues because of David Aja.
Absolutely.
Javier Pulido is a fantastic artist and has a style that complements what they're doing in the book and all that sort of stuff. He is not David Aja.
No, he is not.
And every page you read this, you're reminded of the fact that he is not David Aja.
It's like if you have a band and they're an amazing band, and then one week the singer from another band comes on and he's really great too, but it's not the same.
Yep.
But he's trying to sing exactly like the first guy in that. So that also doesn't work.
Yep.
And I believe it's possible that the writing is going to get tiresome.
Well, I mean, this is the problem I've had with this book from the beginning, which is that I still don't feel like this is actually Hawkeye.
No, I think it's pretty interesting that he still hasn't appeared in costume.
Yeah, it's true.
I was looking at this time, I'm like, really? Still not gonna?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, like, the thing is, I know it's Clint Barton and stuff like that, but it still feels like, you know, Fraction's writing a clever, hip version of Clint Barton that he wishes existed, you know? Which is fine.
About being, he can make that exist.
Yeah, he's doing it. But
it's Tony Stark with, I was going to say less money, but that's not even true.
With blonde hair.
Yeah, it's and no tech.
Yeah, I mean, this is good. It was good. It just felt a little less than.
Yeah, so. It's one of those, like, it can't help but suffer in comparison to where literally reading the pages, I was just like, my God.
Yeah.
Where has this been? Yeah. And you can bring on Hollingsworth and he can try to make it look the same. It isn't the same, though.
Yeah.
Which is you know, fair enough. And this is as many issues of anything as Aja does straight through, and I get that. Yeah. But I'll be excited if he comes back.
Yep, cool. So I haven't talked about it in a while, but Glory number 30, I wanted to mention, because not only does it have a great cover, Anka is really good, but it's just funny to see, like, I if you haven't stuck with this or you're not reading it, Josh, you might want to grab the trade or whatever to see, like, so Joe Keating has put, there's a three-page kind of prelude that is kind of Glory in the early 1900s in Paris hanging out with Ernest Hemingway.
Oh, that's right up your alley.
I know.
I will say that I didn't actively drop this.
Yeah.
I think I just missed it at some point.
Right.
And then I got off track.
Right.
So I didn't mean to not read it.
Well, you might want to go back to pick it up because this is most recently this current story arc is really, really good. And Ross Campbell's art is just getting better and better with every issue. Like, it's just getting more and more, you know, excited. And this basically is Glory versus her younger sister. And, you know, more brutal fight, more like they punched each other's arms off, basically. Like, both fists hit each other and they came to mush. It was awesome. But I think when this all rolled out earlier this year, it was a big kind of noise and then it kind of quieted back down. But this has been top notch every issue. So, really good stuff. So, dug it.
Yeah. Daredevil was another one that people said
fucking
should be pick of the week.
Creepy. Creepy. No, creepy on several levels. Because, like, what you had was you had creepy Daredevil head.
Right.
You know, so the villain who we assumed was a much more intense, awful version of the Spot had some device that put his little teleporting thing on Daredevil's neck and was able to dislodge his head from his body. And then Daredevil realizes he can still control his body. And considering he doesn't need a sight, he can still control his body and use his radar. And so you've got disheaded Daredevil body walking around.
I was the thing that got me about this was, I think that it was one of those, oh, Wade is a sick dude.
Yeah, this has got
not
dark.
But like just a really good imagination for horrible ways that this kind of stuff could be.
Yeah.
And I really love the way that it was laid out.
Yeah.
Smuggling drugs in the portal belly of pregnant women.
Oh God.
And the shots of the slaves like being forced to work in drug fields and being put in the harem and you don't quite realize that they're not showing any of them above the shoulders.
Well, what totally
sex
yeah,
orgies,
which was that was great how they utilized the neck thing. And then what I thought was even crazier was that Daredevil's de-headed body is walking around trying to find out how the spot's doing this, and he stumbles upon the spot. All in hanging with wires going in and out of his teleporting spots, and it looks like in agony and in pain. And because his head's not there, and because he can't see, he doesn't know. And so that page
An Eisner page.
That page is an Eisner page. That this page is like, oh, great. And then it's not until the dude comes back and he's able to the dude he thought was the spot comes back and he's able to take his neck thing off and kind of throw it down. He realizes he's like, the spot? I thought, who are you? And we're going to find out next issue what the deal is, but it looks like this dude might be somebody who's not the spot. So
you know what? The last page, though, felt like an old-timey, sort of an EC Comics ending.
Yeah,
and if
totally.
They just didn't go, they just don't go back to it.
Yeah.
like it'll be like, oh, yeah, no, the people just beat the shit out of him. Yeah. That's the end. Like the villain gets their bloody comeuppance. It's a weird issue. Not in a bad way, just different than the others.
It's continuing the darkness, the dark that Wade is bringing to the book. So
yeah.
Anyway, all right.
Deep, scary imagination.
Yes. Mind the Gap number 6 for new issue, new jumping on the new story arc, first issue in the new story arc. And this is the real kind of first issue where we get a real example of the conceit of the book in real life, where. Basically, what Jim McCann's come up with is that the victim, the girl L, is able to move her body into the other body of other people also in comas, and she kind of wakes up this little girl who is who's brain dead, and they think it was an accident, but turns out her brother killed her, and so she's kind of she goes into the body and she's trying to help the little girl by getting the word out that it was the brother. I thought it was cool to see the idea finally come out into kind of in a practical use.
So then the episodic notion would be
that she goes into different bodies and using those bodies to help solve their problems, but then also to solve her problem, to find out who hurt her. So
it's like Quantum Leap.
Yeah, Quantum Leap, but a little more supernatural.
Also that,
Yeah, less sciencey. But but good stuff. Strong by Rodine. Rodine Esquejo. There's a big double page spread in the hospital. The girl, the girl coming out of the coma, which was really, really good. So jump onto it. So
yeah. And I think that it would be remiss with 3 issues to go, 4, I guess. Hellblazer 297 came out. Everybody's getting. You're going to get a report on every issue that comes up from.
So yes, it's the countdown to your suicide.
The countdown to my exit from comics.
Yeah, basically
wholesale.
Yeah.
It's been a great story. This one. Basically, they find out there's a killer that looks just like John Constantine in Ireland, and it's a whole family thing, and there's magic, and they bring back the dead, and the great part is at the end, everything is fine, and the he's like a. Nephew, I think, of Constantine. He's like, so I guess we can be friends now. And he's like, nope, we're not going to do that. Take care of yourself. It just takes off, and it's perfect Constantine. One of the things that showed up for me in this that really bummed me out is that sort of as they're driving away, Constantine and Epiphany, his wife, and they're just talking filthy to each other, and they're gonna fuck.
Yeah,
and I was like, well, that's over.
Yeah,
he's like, and then back to Brixton to fuck your brains out. And I'm just like, it's all over. It's gone.
Jeez.
Sons of bitches. But, Milligan and Kevin Coley. Kevin Coley, really, I got to give him credit for doing double duty. I mean, just like Somni.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah. So.
And there you go.
All right. So how many more issues left of the 3 after this one or 2 after this one?
298, 298, 299, and 300.
All right. So the countdown begins. So, all right.
Always on time. Never dropped. Anyway. So.
All right. So those are the books we enjoyed this week. And we just, before we call it a day, I just want to highlight the books that you all thought were your pick of the week, that were the picks of the week. Do the top 5 countdown of the iFan base. And coming in at number 5 was Deadpool number 2, your previous pick of the week, Josh. Deadpool number 1 was 5.1% of the iFan base thought Deadpool number 2 was pick of the week. Captain America number 1, Rick Remender's debut, got 7.6% of the iFan base. Wonder Woman number 14 got 9.3%.
Wow.
Yeah. Uncanny X-Force number 34, which was gut-wrenching, by the way, which was great.
This is the last one?
No, it's not the last one. I think it's the penultimate one. I think there's one more to go. Got 12.8% of the picks of the week. It was the last issue of the Final Execution arc, and we kind of got some resolution there, and Wolverine killed Dokken finally, and that was rough. But good stuff. Good stuff.
So he's done now. He's gone.
I hope so. God, I hope so.
That's a good call.
That's a good call.
Nice work, Rick.
And Phantom X is still dead. And finally, Amazing Spider-Man number 698 gets the number one pick of the week by the iFanboy community with 40.3% of the of the picks of the week. So, Josh, you were alone in your criticism.
If nothing else has been clear, it's that I do not have my finger on any sort of pulse.
Yeah, yeah.
I never have.
Yeah.
It should be noted, like we said, this is actually Thanksgiving right now, so by the time that you hear this, those could have changed some, but they're generally...
Yeah,
right.
They'll shift a little, but generally it looks like with 40% over Uncanny X-Force over 12.4%, I think Amazing Spider-Man will hold on. So
yeah,
all right, cool. So that wraps us up. So I'm gonna get to my Thanksgiving dinner. But we do want to remind you that we've got some other things you can check out. You can go to ifanboy.com on Mondays to listen to the iFanboy Don't Miss podcast. We skipped this week because of Thanksgiving and it gets tough and all that stuff, but we'll be back to talk to a creator about an upcoming book. And if you just need that iFanboy Don't Miss fix, you can go listen to Paul talk to Josh Dysart about Harbinger, which came out last week. So that's always a fun listen. And you can subscribe to that on iTunes or over at ifanboy.com.
I will say the same thing happened with Make Comics this week.
Yep.
It wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
There was a lot going on, but I'm scheduled to record, so there's definitely new episodes coming up soon.
Good luck.
So don't you worry about that. You can also go and check out ifanboy.com for the pick of the week review that I wrote, which was not in any way shortened.
Yep.
It was a full real review, holiday and all.
As well as over on ifanboy.com, there were some great Thanksgiving themed posts.
Yes.
Yeah.
And reviews. We've been getting a lot of reviews up of the new Marvel books coming out and things like that. So if you're curious, you want to try before buying or anything like that, there's stuff there. Look out. We try to get all sorts of that stuff that is important to you, along with other stuff that's going on in the comic book world. Go to ifanboy.com/about. You can see all of us who work on the site, social network things, stuff like that. Follow us on twitter.com/ifanboy to make sure that you don't miss anything, or you could use facebook.com/ifanboy if that makes you happy. This last week also, we wrapped up our video coverage of the New York Comic Con. There were many videos. I'm going to say 17, 18, something like that. But they're all still up there. If you didn't get a chance to watch them, I will say that I really enjoyed the crop of videos that we did at this last show.
Yeah, they were really good. They were a lot of fun. Yeah, so.
Yeah, a lot of familiar faces, but a lot of new faces too, and a lot of good stuff for folks who love comics and that stuff.
Yeah, we really glossed over the Thanksgiving post, but if you didn't go back and read, start with Timmy Wood's email thread between the JLA working out their Thanksgiving plans. And then take a look at the iFanboy staff, what we all give thanks for, which I thought was always great and heartwarming and great to see just the community that we put together. And then if you haven't relived the great moments in comics at the Thanksgiving Day Parade over the years, that's always a fun one to go check out. So definitely go to iFanboy.com and check out all Thanksgiving posts.
You love that parade video.
I love those parade videos. They're great.
So much.
That one Connor found of Superman in the 40s is awesome. I love that one. And the Marvel ones are always funny. So. Anyway, from the 80s, they're always good. Call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Or you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. It's always great to hear everybody. And next week, we'll be back with emails and voicemails. And finally, go to iTunes, leave a review for the show or for iFanboy Don't Miss or for Make Comics. Or help spread the word. Tell your friends who might not know about iFanboy. Tell them to check it out. You know, everybody loves a good podcast. It's totally free. So enjoy it, please. So we wish everyone in the United States had a great, wonderful Thanksgiving, and everyone else abroad in the rest of the world. We hope you had a good Thursday,
We're sorry we were late by a month, Canada.
I know, sorry, Canada. We're always behind. Anyway, but I'm just thankful that I survived last weekend, so that was good. And then and those of you who go to iFanboy saw the karaoke video, you know what I'm talking about.
You're a brave man, dude.
Hey, yeah, well, I had
I'm going to put this video up of you. Yeah, go for it.
Listen.
By the way, I've had an unbelievable and lopty neck in my head for a week straight now, and I want to kill myself.
Well, what's sad, to give the kind of feedback on that, is that when you're at a wedding and Mike Allred turns to you and goes, "I just signed up for karaoke. Are you signing up?" You say yes. You don't say no to Mike Allred. That's what I've learned.
God.
And by the way, Mike Allred killed it on Bowie's Rebel Rebel that night. That they like real like really dude, the dude can sing really good. So that's number one. And then number two is you just got to go with it and have fun. And then you get great things like, you know, emailing with comic pros who weren't at the event or anything who signed their email going, oh, by the way, Ron, you're unbelievable. It's like, oh, God, you saw that.
the thing that I'm impressed with is not you, I was like, he's going to get eviscerated in the comments. And everybody was very nice and supportive.
They
and
really
I thought
were.
That was so sweet.
Yeah, they really were. They really, really
I was
were.
Like, wow,
yeah.
you guys are top-notch folk.
Hey, man, I brought it. I brought it.
Okay, I'll give you that.
So
that's fine.
All right, so that's going to wrap us up. So we hope everybody had a great holiday in the States and a good Thursday elsewhere. Until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Josh, and Connor's going to be so upset with us. Let's just not tell him.
Okay, shh. Nobody tell him.
Shh. Nobody tell Connor.
I don't even think he read his books yet. So.
And our fall.
All right, take care, everybody.
Bye.
There'll be much mistletoeing, and hearts will be glowing when loved ones are near. It's the most wonderful time. Yes, the most wonderful.